Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yo, fellas, have you heard the latest Magic Johnson news?
Hit me.
I'm going to hit you 100 million times, Travis. That's how much money Magic Johnson is helping to front for loans for businesses owned by minorities and women in order to help them sustain themselves during the pandemic. $100 million.
Now, Travis, remember you last segment you asked me would I be surprised about anything that Donald Sterling would do.
Right.
I could use the same thing for Magic Johnson.
Yeah, for an entirely different reason.
Am I surprised that Magic Johnson would do that? No, I'm not surprised,
million?
But I'm glad that he did do it because that's who he is. That's who he is. Something needs to be done, and guess what? He's done it. He figured out a way to do it. Wherever he got the money from, if he went underneath his mattress, he figured out how to do it.
Well, he's funding it through his company. He's got an insurance company called Equal Trust Life Insurance, and they're working with the SBA, the Small Business Administration, to help beef up the PPP program for minorities. Because when money was going to companies, including the Lakers, the minority companies couldn't get those loans. Now, obviously, the Lakers and other big companies are giving the money back, but that still takes time. And in that time, these companies during the pandemic are out there hanging out. So Magic got word, saw that all these minority businesses all over the country were just struggling to keep their doors open. And he stepped in with his company and said, let's do something about it.
That's so wild, though. Companies that don't even necessarily need the money, they figured out how to get it to them. But the companies that need it, that happen to be minority-owned, they figured out how not to get it to them. Oh, well, you got to resend the paperwork. We lost it. We can't find it. She's going to call you back in 30 minutes.
here's how bad it was. This is how bad it was. The Center for Responsible Lending projected that more than 90% of Black, Latino, and Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander-owned businesses were unlikely to get a PPP loan through the regular process, through the initial sort of recovery package
distribution.
Exactly. 90%. 90%.
Look, I don't know if there's anybody, and I'm sure there is, but certainly being here in L.A. The way that we all are, and having grown up with Magic and having been Magic as my favorite player, I don't know if there's anybody that has done more with their celebrity and their opportunities and their access to other people that have money and celebrity and opportunity to help more people than Magic Johnson. You know what I mean?
I would argue to say I haven't seen it. Now, there may be people. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Kaufman and Bro gives gazillions of dollars to underprivileged kids all over the world. I have no idea. I mean, I know he's a big component of those sort of things. I know that there's people that have foundation and they do philanthropy. I get it. But for somebody in sports who is essentially the mayor of Los Angeles without even being the mayor of Los Angeles, and for all intents and purposes, the governor of the state without even being the governor, I don't see anybody. I've been here my whole life. I've been a part of L.A., California, my entire life, and I've never seen it.
It's extraordinary. We'll come back. We'll talk more about Magic's donation, the $100 million to businesses, in just a little bit. But as promised, right now, joining us, he covers college football for ESPN, Paul Feinbaum, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Paul, good morning. How are you?
What is going on, guys? Good morning.
What's up, Paulie, man? What's going on down south? SEC going to have football, unlike the Pac-12?
Yeah, we're definitely having it, Keyshawn. If you want to see some really good football, come on over.
Well, you know the good thing about it, Paul, is I'm going to have an opportunity to see some of my West Coast Pac-12 brethren go down south to play football. It sounds like, listening to you and other people, that if the Pac-12 conference decides to void this season and the NC2A goes through with the transfer rule, there'll be a number of high-profile players looking for new schools that certainly will have teams like Alabama and Tennessee and Ole Miss lined up on their doorsteps.
Yeah, it'll be the great California gold rush in reverse. Instead of everybody coming out there, everyone out there is going to come everywhere else. And guys, listen, you're there. I'm not. Every day there's a different story, and that goes for every sport, for that matter. But the California and Pac-12 messaging has been pretty bad so far. On our program, we talk to people from every walk of life, and things can change until summer and early fall. But the Pac-12 seems to be clueless in terms of trying to get its act together.
Why is that, though? Why can the rest of the Power Fives seem as though they could have a united front and get it together, where the Pac-12 is like on its own little island and can't figure it out? Is it money?
No, I mean, I think it comes from leadership, and I don't know where else to go, because you have all these other commissioners who are putting out a positive message. And by the way, just because you put out a positive message doesn't mean this will come to fruition. But I talked to a couple of different Pac-12 coaches. I talked to the Utah coach the other day, Kyle Willingham, and he was talking about all kinds of different models, where most of the people are saying we're going to have a season. It will begin on September 5th. Now, a lot of this is politics, Keyshawn, and the political environment in California and elsewhere is different than it is in the South, where the governors understand if you don't talk about college football as a reality or the economy as a reality, you'll probably lose. And I'm not making a value judgment. I mean, the most important thing in all of this is health. I'm just telling you about how it's being perceived.
I would add, Paul, that, you know, particularly when it comes to California, people underestimate just how big and massive this state is and how different each region is economically, as well as the way that they're impacted by this pandemic. So, you know, you could have one set of schools be in an area in California that is manageable, but then when you come to like a SC, for instance, in LA County, where the virus is much more prevalent, it's just a different environment, a different set of rules. So I can see the inconsistencies, because they're trying to paint an entire picture, but they really have all these fragments.
Yeah, you're right. I think the most negative thing that happened, and it has nothing to do with the Pac-12, but it does in perception, is a week ago when the Cal State system announced it would not be having fall students on campus, and that just set off a wave around the country as if the Pac-12 is out of business. I think it was incorrect. Well, I know it was incorrect, but it didn't stop the perception. And, you know, back to your point about managing that state, I mean, I heard Andrew Cuomo yesterday talk about how we're going to open up parts of the upstate New York, the Buffalo area, et cetera, while downstate New York City, it's a totally different story. I don't know why the governor out there can't be more judicious in that respect, because, yeah, I mean, California's the largest state in the country. It's, you know, bigger than some continents in terms of population. And it just sends the wrong message. I wouldn't want to be at SC right now or UCLA or anywhere else when you get lumped in Stanford, for that matter, in a broad statement. I get it. I mean, I watch the situation out there pretty closely. But would somebody tell me why Chancellor in the middle of March, March 14th, had to make that announcement? It could have waited.
Paul Feinbaum joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. And Paul, you know, you mentioned that you think leadership in the conference has something to do with the situation they're in right now when it comes to starting football in the fall. But is it the same answer when it comes to why the Pac-12 has fallen off competitively with the other Power Five conferences over the last few years? I mean, you'll have a little, Oregon will pop up. SC had a season a couple of years ago, but the Pac-12 seems to have been the weakest of the five for quite some time. Is that the same reason? Is it because of the conference leadership?
No, we don't pay.
Well, you know, I think Keyshawn answered the question. I refuse to blame SC's problems on Larry Scott. I don't think he has anything to do with it, but apologize for my dog.
Man, but, shut that hound up.
He showed more fight right there than SC did. but you know, back to the point, I mean, some of that is his responsibility, but you know, SC has been a collection of mismanagement and bad decisions, as you guys well know and have talked about ad nauseum. And it was interesting, the, you know, Mel Tucker at Colorado, why did he leave there to go to Michigan State? Because the pay, his assistants weren't making any money. He wasn't making any money. Well, I mean, he was compared to other coaches. I mean, and Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban, and you know, they're making $9 million a year, and, Jim Harbaugh's making $8 million, and others are making $6-7 million. And not only that, the assistants. I mean, the assistant coach at LSU last year, he's now at Baylor as the head coach, was making nearly $3 million a year. Keyshawn, you know that. If you pay salaries like that to assistant coaches, you're not going to have to worry about the same things that UCLA and SC and everyone else in that league has to deal with.
And as Paul could explain this too, if you go back in the years where SC was dominant, we was pretty much on par with the SEC in terms of paying coaches, and then all of a sudden we got leapfrogged by the SEC conference. Pete Carroll leaves, we get leapfrogged, and then they're spending crazy money and we're still at the same level and we haven't taken that next step, and we really don't know when we're going to take the next step as far as paying goes.
And explain to me why, when you consider, we're talking about a private school, we're talking about a rich alumni base, an endowment base. Now, I don't know where everything's going to be in a couple of months, I mean, because of the circumstances we're in, but we're talking about past history. And yeah, you have coaches in the SEC. I mean, the worst coach in the SEC is making $4 million a year. And that really does matter. And players, look around and they see the facilities and they gravitate to that. Now, this is all prior to the spring when a lot of things were going to change or may change dramatically. Or may not at all, but, just a collection of mistakes have been made out there in individual settings. And also some coaches that just haven't worked out. Chip Kelly was wooed by Tennessee, by Florida, and he ended up at UCLA. And you tell me why he's failed out there.
Well, because he can't recruit, and no one wants to really go to UCLA, to be honest with you. That's the reason I see it. Now, let me ask you this question. How long will Lane Kiffin make it to the USC Ole Miss game, back-to-back game? I think it's 2025, I think it is.
I think he'd like
2025 and 2026.
Will he make it that? Will
no.
he be there?
No. He won't make it because I think he's going to be successful at Ole Miss and will likely have a better job by then.
What job would be better than an SEC Ole Miss if you're winning and they're paying?
I can think of other SEC jobs or jobs around the country that would appeal to him more. And I mean, Ole Miss is a good job, but it's not a great job. The recruiting base is compressed because of all the people around you. But yeah, I mean, I just think Lane is a restless guy. You know him, Keyshawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't imagine, what's that, 5 years, 6 years from now? I can't imagine Lane Kiffin being in the same place he is.
Okay.
A coach, I like calling you coach because you talk like one. When I look at the situation with the supplemental draft, and we had a conversation about this yesterday, there could be a problem with players who make themselves eligible for the supplemental draft, then not getting picked up because NFL teams can't evaluate them, and now they're somewhat homeless. I know that there's been questions in terms of being addressed with spring sports. Has NCAA thought about this at all? And what would you like to see them handle this problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have thought about it, but not very eloquently. I mean, I think Harbaugh made an interesting proposal. I think Harbaugh's proposal was, you know, if they don't get drafted in the main draft, they could come back, or in terms of the supplemental draft. I don't see, there just seems to be an aversion, LZ, to the supplemental draft. Now, I don't mean to make a broader statement about the NCAA, but I mean, the NCAA right now is under so much pressure on countless issues, whether it's the NIL, whether it's the Pac-12 does not have a season, do they let those players leave? I mean, I and they're not going to get any help because not to get off on a totally different tangent, but the NCAA was really counting on Congress to bail them out on the name, image, and likeness issue, and there's some doubt now whether that's going to happen with so many other pressing issues in Washington.
Paul Feinbaum, host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Paul, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, bud.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Now go feed that dog.
See you soon. Okay, man. Yeah. He's angry.
All right, so, Key, you said that it comes down to money. They don't pay guys. There's one other thing that they don't do in the Pac-12. I'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
When you think about it, the Pac-12 conference has to figure out a lot of things. There's not a lot of money from a television standpoint. Hopefully, they could sort of get some sort of streaming rights from one of these big internet companies that's looking to get into the sports business and stream things. That way they can generate some more revenue to be able to keep head coaches around, pay assistant coaches. And like Paul was saying, Mel Tucker left in the middle of the night because they basically doubled his salary at Michigan State. He was on a golf course doing a fundraiser for Colorado and was negotiating at the same time, and when he left, he never came back. He got on a private jet and went to Michigan State, and the next day signed his contract that was lucrative and lined up his assistants that was making low six figures to guys now doubling and tripling their salaries into the high six-figure, seven-figure range as assistant coaches. So until the Pac-12 figure out how to pay guys, you're going to always have and always be behind the eight ball.
But here's the thing, guys.
Is it about figuring out how to pay them?
Exactly.
Or is it not a priority? Yes, or is it not a priority?
I don't necessarily know if the money allows them to, based on the deals that they've structured from a TV standpoint, just a revenue-generating standpoint. I don't know that they have the funds to do that.
I hear what you're saying, that there is a revenue issue to this too, but it's not the money nearly as much as it is the want. And let me explain. Paul Feinbaum just told us that governors have to take a position on college football in SEC states, that they knew that touching that, that saying there might not be football was death to their political.
Oh, my God, yes.
So they know that. Out here, that's not an issue. We like college football. We like going to SC games. You like going to an Oregon game. It's really fun, but it's not important. Think about this. When a kid is born in the state of Alabama, they put either an Auburn or an Alabama beanie on that kid. Like, you're making a lifetime commitment in that moment, practically. You're talking about an entire culture that insists on college football being a part of their lives. Out here on the West Coast, it's just simply not like that.
Well, you're
not going to pay an assistant coach $3 million. You're not going to build these crazy facilities at all these places. That, yes, SC has a tradition and they can compete. Yes, UCLA used to be good at football. Yes, Oregon is the best team in the conference right now. But you're talking about assistant coaches making $3 million in the SEC? It's just never going to be like that here, ever, because we don't care enough. We don't insist on it.
Well, I think you got to be fair, though, with the West Coast in general, not just California. There's more to do in these states than there is to do in some of those other states.
Why we care less. There are some really good reasons why we care less, but we
like
care
on a
less.
Saturday, like on a Saturday, seriously, in December or November on a Saturday, you're like going golfing or you're going to the snow. You're not sitting around at a tailgate for 19 hours trying to figure out how to roast a pig. It just doesn't, it's not what we do out here. Money-wise, again, like I said, if you go back to the Pete Carroll days, just said here, or you go back to the Chip Kelly days at Oregon, those coaches were paid at a level of the best in the country. But then everybody else leapfrogged us, and we stayed the same. We didn't grow.
Right.
Okay? And that's part of the problem. The SEC network was born. The ESPN dove money into the SEC. ACC. All of these started things were born. The Big 12 did a Big 10 did a big huge deal with Fox, and so it became very, very serious in terms of the economics. But we stayed the same. Larry Scott didn't move the needle.
It's priorities. You've been around. LZ, you grew up in the Midwest. You see what those programs of places like Michigan and Notre Dame and Ohio State, what they mean to those communities, what they mean to that area. It just simply isn't like that out here for all the reasons you mentioned, Key. But until there's the want, and I would argue that there never will be the want like that for all the reasons you mentioned. But until we care about it the way that we do, put it to you this way, and this isn't a perfect comparison, but if all of a sudden it became an arms race in the NBA, the way that it is in college football, the Lakers would find a way to compete in that universe because we care about the Lakers here the way that we don't care about college football.
Well, it's a little bit. We don't care about college basketball on the West Coast either. So,
right.
And they do in those
cares
other
about
states.
College basketball.
Let me ask you a question, LZ, because this would be more education for me, and you have a clear. Exactly. Clear understanding of these sort of things, but it dives into what Travis was saying about the governors and the politics and the things of that nature. In the regions that we would talk about, the SEC, the ACC, those sort of regions and those governors, which one of those states' governors have heavy influence in political outcomes opposed to, like, our political people out here in terms of their careers? Like, who has more juice?
Well, I would say I would start with this, and I haven't done the research on this, but that's a really good question.
Stick to politics.
See which governors in these conferences are up for re-election. Start there.
Okay.
Right? So if you're in the SEC and you have some governors who are up for re-election, they may view keeping football off the field as a negative impact on their reelection chances.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So I would start there. Then I would start to look at what you're talking about in terms of maybe having more influence on a federal level. We do know that, you know, Cuomo had somewhat of an adversarial relationship. We know that the governor in Michigan has somewhat of an adversarial relationship. We know that Gavin Newsom, for the most part, appears to be trying to play some sort of game, try to play both sides of it. So there's a lot of political maneuvering happening on the state between the federal governors. But I would really start with, look at all the governors who are either up for re-election now or whose money is closely tied to boosters who are connected to the SEC. And that may give you some more information in terms of why certain schools or conferences are more motivated than others.
Well, you can certainly, as a lot of them start to, you know, when you see them talking and stuff like that, you can certainly see that there's like some hidden agendas. You're sitting there going, yeah, he's jumping up and down for college sports to start back. Something must be going on from a political stand. You can certainly see it. And Paul Feinbaum spoke to it by saying the governors certainly feel like it would be death to their political careers if they did not talk for college sports in those conferences.
It has to be addressed. It has to be addressed by those guys in those conferences. It cannot be something that is, hey, look, we're going to make sure that we get X, Y, and Z taken care of. Then we'll get to college football. It is not. That's not the order. That might be the order out here. That's not the order in some other places. And we can argue about which order is a better order. But the fact of the matter is, the reason the SEC is going to play football and the Pac-12 might not is because the people, the governors, the coaches, the administrators, everybody in that part of this country cares far more about having football than we do out here.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is. And you're not going to tell me that a conference that oversees arguably the greatest collection of academic institutions, you know, in Division I, can't figure out how to make money by making football central. You're not going to sell me on that. It just isn't a priority. There's no one who is responsible for overseeing these great institutions who are looking at this sport and going, damn, I wish you could figure out a way to make money. No, they just don't care.
Keith, tell me this. Give me the rankings. I don't need 1 through 12. I need 1, and I need maybe 12. In the Pac-12, who cares the most about their college football team and who cares the least? Because it I would have thought there would have been SC and a runaway at the top, but I'm not so sure anymore that Oregon is first.
SC 1, Arizona 2.
Two?
I mean, Arizona 12, I'm sorry. Arizona's
Oregon
last.
Oregon seems to be far more committed to USC than USC has recently.
No, SC's committed to winning. They just they don't have a brain. Some of the people don't have a brain. They got money and they don't know how to operate. But they're committed to winning.
I'm not being flip when I ask this. Give me an example of them being committed to winning.
Well, look, they've had Travis. They've had a million different things that they've had to deal with over the last couple of years, and they certainly have tried to figure all those sort of things out. They got rid of Lynn Swan. They have yet to get rid of Coach Helton. They got rid of two coaches prior to Coach Helton. Helton's time is coming if he doesn't win. Just trust me on that one. It's coming if he doesn't win. Because if they don't take care of business, he just got a lucky rabbit foot, man. Every time something happens, something happens. It's like, well, he had a bad season. Well, we had to get rid of the AD. The new AD came. He doesn't know the landscape. Let's keep him. He's under 3-year contract. Yeah, we don't want to fire him because of that. We don't want to do that. Then we have to – now the pandemic comes. Oh, we don't have spring ball. We make Council Alabama. I got another window out. It just – those sort of things keep happening. He got a lucky rabbit foot. But his time, if he doesn't win, is going to come.
That front on the guys, the administrators key. The administrators at SC.
They cleaned house on a lot of the administrators in the athletic department.
But I'm talking at the very top, the president of the university and the guys that are hiring the athletic directors. Those guys are more committed to their football team than the guys at Oregon, because the guys at Oregon seem to be doing, whether it's facilities, whether it's coaches, whether it's identifying
the right coach, whether it's moving on from a guy. In respect to Bob, Big Bob. A lot of things that Oregon can't even hold water with SC. Okay, number one, the academics. SC's academics is more.
Come on, man. We're talking about the football program.
No, but you talk about the people at top. The people at top were brought there and more entrenched to try to solve those problems that they have from an academic standpoint, from the lawsuits. All that's what they was brought in to deal with. They're trying to handle that before they move on to the sports side of things, because eventually they got to move on to the sports side of things, because if they don't move on to the sports side of things, the sports is what helps revenue come in to the university for the university to even be able to operate outside of tuition. So they've got to fix it. They just – it's so much on their plate right now, they can't fix everything all at once.
MJ is a snitch. That according to no less of authority than one of his former teammates. We'll get into it next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Key, we were talking about it during the break here a little bit. We were continuing our conversation about the differences between the SEC and the Pac-12. And look, there's something equal parts admirable and incredibly revolting about how the SEC goes about running their athletic programs, in particular their football programs. They're not pretending that they're there to create the whole man. They're not there pretending that they're there to make sure that you're a well-rounded human being. They're there to win football games, and they make no bones about it. They're not saying, well, you know, we're going to make sure that we got doctors and lawyers and teachers and accountants, police officers. We're here to win football games and put guys in the NFL, and if you can't do it, we're going to find somebody who can.
Yeah,
it's gross and awesome.
There's no pretending at all. I mean, it is gross, but at the same time, we know what that is. It ain't. They're not sitting around. Like, they know these dudes are here to play sports and go get paid. Not this
right.
whole education, oh, we're going to educate them and we're going to make a whole man out of them. No, stop that. They're here to put butts in the seats, win football games, get me an extension, and go get their money. We out here on the West Coast – we want to act like we want to build a whole integrity and a guy and a whole man. You know, one of the things I told John Robinson when I went to USC, I said, man, look, coach, he says, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be the best player in college football, and I want to be the number one pick in the draft. He said, well, what about school? I said, in that education, it'll come with it. but it ain't the priority. The priority is to be able to help my family. And that's an SEC mentality. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll get my degree, but let's focus in on why I'm here. I'm really here to play football. Okay, the degree is cool. I'm going to get it. But I may never have to use it in my life. It's good to have on my window, posted on my Twitter account. It's all good. But I'm here to play football. The SEC people, they understand that mentality. They go, we want to win. How can we win? There was a guy who once upon a time coached in the SEC. What's his name? Lane Kiffin. Let's get him again. Well, he got fired. I don't care. He can coach. Let's pay him.
And pay his assistants, and build a facility, and build a weight room, and give him a plane, and all
because that's all they care about.
Comes along with it, and, right?
And that's all they care about, and that's why we shouldn't sit around and complain that we behind. Until we take that mentality, which we'll never do, we're gonna be behind. That's just the bottom line. With the SEC, if Urban Meyer made a decision to go coach the University of Tennessee, if he said I wanted that Tennessee job, they would have blew that dude out of there so fast it gave Urban Meyer $10 million a year and kept it moving. Mm-hmm. Okay? They tried to hire a guy in Greg Schiano who was part of the Joe Paterno situation. He was part of that whole little scandal. They was like, man, hire that dude.
Yeah, he's a good coach. He wins games.
He's going to try to help us win. Hire him. And then you had a section of the people, you know, said no, but for the most part, they went and hired him. They took a high school coach and Hugh Freeze from Ole Miss who could cheat his tail off and hired him. They said, well, we'd rather be number one in the polls for a couple years. We'll deal with the scandal later.
Exactly.
You know what's so funny, Keith? I mean, you're 100% correct with that, but it's also sad. Like, I just pulled up because I was just kind of curious.
No, it's sad, but it's the reality.
It's both. That,
but list of U.S. states by poverty rate. And it's just, there's a correlation.
Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana, whatever.
I don't want to be that snob, but there's a correlation. And so I hear you. They're saying things like, we don't care about, you know, I'll get my degree later. Let's get these wins. Well, that seems to be a mentality that's reflected in a lot of other tangible socioeconomic ways. So I understand.
And they don't care.
That's the mentality. That's what it is. That's what it is. I get it. From a social standpoint, I understand. We don't want to see our people, nor do we want to see anybody be taken advantage of in that aspect. But that is what it is. And they're taking full advantage of it. They want to get the best dude. What's the linebacker that's with the Redskins that got drafted by the 49ers? Reuben Foster. Reuben Foster had an Auburn tattoo on his arm because he originally committed to them. He went and tatted his whole arm of Auburn. Guess where he wound up going? Alabama.
Right.
So then he had to get it covered up and put an Alabama one on his arm. You see? So that just goes to speak to what you and I are saying. Okay? That speaks to both fronts.
This is why I always got a kick out of Jerry Karkanian. For years and years when he was at UNLV, he was in the Big West and then eventually the WAC, but he made no bones about what he was doing in Vegas, that I'm here to get guys to the NBA and win as many games as I can. And he did not put on the show about, we're turning out this amount of graduation rate and we're making sure that this guy is here and we're taking care of this, that, and the next thing. It was, no, I'm here to win basketball games and make sure these guys go play in the NBA. It's really uncomfortable, but at least it's honest. At least it's real. And I don't know if I would want to send one of my guys to go play for somebody like that, but I respect the fact that they're at least brazen enough to kind of admit it.
So you don't want the – so in other words, you're not with the whole Coach K, we're going to turn them into men, and even though they're going to be a Duke for a semester.
You know what? So I do think with a guy like Coach K specifically that there is a way to kind of have it both ways there. But it's the guys that are in the middle that are pretending.
Man, them dudes
it's that,
don't
that
graduate from Duke. Man, them dudes go to the NBA.
No, they do now, Keith, because he changed his philosophy. He decided that one and done was the future of college basketball. He had no choice. He had to do it. There are places that do it a little bit differently. And I'm not giving Coach K a pass. What I'm saying is it's the guys that are pretending that, oh, you know what? We're going to make sure I'm going to treat your son like he's one of my own. I'm going to make sure that he's well taken care of. No, no, no. I'm going to get your son drafted. I'm going to get your son.
Man, the goal. Hey. See, I hate. Here's the thing that I hate. I hate when coaches and players say, "Oh, I'm here for my education." Yeah, it's cool. You are. You want to get educated. But, dude, you there to play football to go try to make money, else you wouldn't be doing it. Okay? You ain't lifted all them weights and run up and down them, running up and down and doing all of that if you ain't trying to go make some money. My guy who's a doctor now, who was a went to Florida State, who's a doctor in Massachusetts. God, I can't even think of his name. But he
– Roll? Maryland,
what's his name?
Myron Roll.
Myron Roll. Myron Roll, great example. You know, he's a doctor. He's a neurosurgeon, like one of the top young neurosurgeons up and coming up in America. He stuck to his true guns, which is, I want to be a neurosurgeon. Got drafted in the NFL, was a good little player for a couple years, but his goal was to get his money so he can go on and go into the medical field. That's what he wanted to do. That's him. But the other 99.9% of the dudes, they not trying to do that. So coaches like Coach Tark that says, hey, man, I'm getting you drafted. That's what, you know, you want to hear that, man. And we're not doing that out west. We're selling something different, and we're going to continue to be behind the eight ball. That's just what it is.
That's how it's going
to
go.
And certain parts of the ACC and certain parts of the Big Ten, them dudes trying to get checks.
But
them
I would
dudes
say-
at Ohio State trying to get checks. And with that, if they graduate or get close to graduating, great. But you see it, they leaving. How long you been here? 3 years, I'm a redshirt sophomore, I'm gone. How long you been here? 3 years, I'm a junior, I'm gone. That's what's happening.
I'm just letting you know that the map I'm looking at, the darker your state is,
man,
the poorer
you
are,
me.
And the lighter your state is, the smarter and richer you are. And the further Pac-12 you get, the lighter you get. And the darker you get, the more SEC you get. That's all I'm saying.
None of this is a coincidence. Look, none of it.
I get it. I just gave you a reference. I got an Auburn tattoo. I committed to them, and I went and got tatted. Oh, I don't want to go there. And now I'm going to go to Alabama. So I'm going to get Alabama.
Why you getting a country accent all of a sudden? I heard that.
No, I ain't do that. That wasn't me.
I'm stuck in there a little bit. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into Michael Jordan and whether or not he's a snitch. Plus, don't forget, you can see Game 6, the movie. That is tonight on ESPN at 6 o'clock. Also on ESPN Plus. All new angles, new footage that we have not seen. It is in high def, too, which I know how important that is for watching sports now. So Game 6, the movie, 6 p.m. on ESPN. More Michael and Horace Grant fighting. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. I have decided that I'm going to take an SEC approach when it comes to Ireland versus Travis Part 2 this Saturday at Black Gold Golf Club in Yorba Linda. I'm going to go out there with my SC mentality, so John has to do double duty, host two shows in one day. Hopefully I don't show up like a Pac-12 team and I'm the guy that has to double dip. You can check out the hole-by-hole coverage on our social media accounts at ESPN Los Angeles. It is coming up this Saturday. We're going to kind of bat lead off for Tiger versus Phil. That is coming up on Sunday. And thanks to our friends at Black Gold. What up, Brian and Joe, and our friends at Travis Matthew. They are introducing TM Rewards. It's their way of rewarding their customers for their loyalty, free shipping, and returns on all of your purchases. Sign up at TravisMatthew.com today.
Well,
all right.
I'll give you a tip on how to beat him. Drop your UC Santa Barbara education and just act like you ain't educated and go wild out there playing golf. You're going to win. Just don't go out there trying to be – don't go out there acting like a golfer. Go out there just acting like a wild man.
Like you don't have no,
yeah, like you ain't got no responsibility at all, and you trying to get to the PGA Tour and not even think about the UC Santa Barbara education, and I bet you win.
Yeah, it's not a bad plan. I might have to do it along the way. John's a Bruin, so we both got our UC educations, I guess, in this case, working against us. These are major strikes that we both are college graduates. Anyway.
You guys, I have to say something about this because I'm looking at ESPN right now, and it's just really pissing me off. It's this whole conversation about the adjustments they're making to the Rooney Rule. And one of the last things that they want to do is require that all 32 teams establish a minority coaching fellowship program. As if the problem is there's not enough qualified African-American coaches right now. As if the problem is we would love to hire more black coaches. They just can't handle the job. So let's establish this mentoring coaching program so that we can get more of them involved. Whereas we know
they
that's
had that,
not the
they
case.
Had that back in the day with,
that's
with
not
Bill
the case.
Walsh.
It's not that you don't have enough. That's not it at all. But they're trying to characterize it like part of the problem is that we don't have enough qualified head coach or black assistant coaches to hire as head coaches. And that's a bunch of BS.
Let's put a fine point on it. Do they want to fix it or do they want to make it look like they're trying to fix it? Because those are not the same thing.
Make the make part.
They want to make it look like they're trying to fix it.
Absolutely. Again, if you want to hire somebody, man, hire them. You don't need to do all of that. You don't need to do all of that. If I want to hire Keyshawn as my general manager, I pick up the phone. I bring him in for an interview. I tell him, hey, here's a plan that I want to do. What's your plan? Who would you bring in? Who would you? It's not that difficult. You do it with everybody. You did it with John Lynch. You did it with John Elway. Hell, it's not that hard.
You putting your name out there,
about,
waiting for the
you're
call?
You're sitting up talking about Peyton Manning can do it. You're like it's not that hard. No, I don't want to do it because, remember, it's only certain part of the reasons I would even be interested in. You did it with Mike Mayock. If John Gruden wanted to hire Mike Mayock, he did it. If John Gruden wanted to fire Reggie McKenzie, he did it. If John Gruden wanted to hire his son as a general manager, he could have done it. It's if you want to do it, you do it. You think Mike Mayock, and I know we can already talk about The Last Dance, but you think Mike Mayock has any more credentials than anybody else that was on TV?
No, that's, about the same.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. But he wanted to hire him. He wanted to hire him. So he did it.
So what's the solution? You're not going to change what's in people's hearts.
I would say part of the solution is being real honest about how people get to the decisions that they make. You know, again, let's take the conversation about same-sex marriages, for example. When it was initially talked about in the 90s, the country collectively said, oh, hell no. That was the conversation. That was the tone. But what changed over the years? People started coming out. And all of a sudden, people who were against it realized that they had people in their lives who were LGBTQ, and their attitudes changed. The country attitudes changed. And today, we have same-sex marriage. It's the exact same thing when it comes to the hiring process.
Happy anniversary.
Right now, thank you, sir. Right, right now, it feels good. Right now,
anniversary right now, for what? No,
right, stop.
Right now, the attitude is still sort of not enough. Minorities are in these inner circles, interacting with these people, so that they can have a better understanding about who they're dealing with and about what the conversation is about. They're still othered. And so instead of thinking about creating these programs where you can pretend as if the real issue is about not having enough qualified minorities, where the real issue is that not enough minorities are in these inner circles so that they can become part of the boys' club in a real way. A real way. Not a BS way, but in a real way that when a job pops up, it's not, oh, we need to interview a minority. How about Eric Benigni? It's, we need somebody that can do this job. My boy Eric is really good. That's what I'm talking about.
That's ownership, though, right? I mean, because the owners are ultimately going to be the guys. And the ownership, and I mean, Green Bay, I guess, is a different dynamic because it's owned by a collective. But Shad Khan in Jacksonville is the only minority owner that am I right? Is he the one of 32 guys?
Yes.
So, until they start buying teams.
But we need to do more stuff like Robert Kraft. Like, he's got his stuff going on. I get that. But he's rocking Air Force Ones, and he's trying to understand black people in a legitimate way. A legitimate way.
No, not just blacks. He's trying to understand minorities in general.
In general, exactly. But in a legitimate way. He's doing stuff. I learned so much about Robert Kraft over this last 6 months of just kind of talking about the issue with the NFL and social justice issues. I learned so much that he was doing for minorities, to Key's point in general, but African-Americans specifically, I was really blown away that he was that invested.
Remember, I used to always try to tell you and Sedano that he was like that, even with the whole kneeling down situation. I'm like, man, he ain't like that. I'm telling y'all. Y'all like, no, man. No. I'm like, no, he ain't. I'm telling you, he ain't. Well, I've been around this dude. Huh?
The only reason why we pushed back was because he was trying to play both sides.
But he's a billionaire. He's a political. You got to play that. You're a billionaire. They play both sides.
But when you talk about my life, I don't want you playing both sides. I want you to pick my life.
But you know how it is, though. He's a billionaire. They going to donate to everybody. They just, he's a friend. I don't believe in what he's saying, but he's cool. He's a friend. I don't believe what he's doing.
Isn't that just as bad? Isn't it? I mean, trying to split the hair. That doesn't sound any better than
he's splitting the hair because he's splitting the hair because he ain't trying to mess off his money. Okay, but at the same time, he understands that the people over to the right, he's got to help that situation. But in order for him to be able to help that situation, he can't alienate the far, far other side. So he still has to deal with that to be able to help the other people. And that's truly what I believe. When I look at guys that do this, playing both sides, I remember, man, I remember, and this is a conversation when I was playing for the Dallas Cowboys, I had with Jerry, because I used to pick Jerry's brain a lot and sit down and talk to him. He said, man, I donate to both. I don't have time for those games. I don't want people messing off my money. And that stuck with me forever. I'm like, okay, I get it. I get it. I don't let politics get in the way of my money. And I understand that when you're dealing at that level. When you're dealing at that level, you don't want to be dealing. Man, them dudes got all sorts of little things going on. Y'all know that. You know they don't want to do that. But the real thing, as I tried to tell LZ and Sedano, is Mr. Kraft ain't like the rest of the 32 owners. He's just not. He's different. I mean, you know, he's different.
He is different.
He's hanging around Meek Mill. What that tell you?
Anyway, you massage the conversation. Stuff from Meek Mill.
All right. Michael Jordan finally got called out by one of his former teammates, and you wonder if it's the beginning of a trend. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.